coffee in bed, and that is Squeeze. And I'm very pleased to have Chris Diffin and Glenn Tilbrook in the studio. How are you, boys?
Juicy.
Juicy? Ludacris is juicy.
I might move my chair slightly away.
I did go on Twitter yesterday and said, are there any questions I should ask Squeeze? Anyone got any questions for Squeeze? And quite a few people came back with, do the pip squeak. That's the sort of Twitter joke.
Okay.
Squeeze it to the pip squeak.
Lovely.
Are you pleased to be back together, you boys? You had a long time apart and now you're recording material again.
Yeah. We did the traditional thing of splitting up, hating each other for a few years, you know.
How many years did you hate him for?
Well, probably much longer than I'll admit, but...
But officially, you hated for a bit years. While you were still a big success.
Until a year after I met him, you know.
Chris, and how long do you hate Glenn for?
As long as Keith Richard does. Did you see that Keith Richard interview?
No, but does he hate Mick?
Well, he was very clever with his words. He said he's been watching his bottom for his whole career, and he could do without what. Watching it.
He was also disparaging his manhood, wasn't he? Which is juvenile, but I thought a great way to get at him. I don't think I would upset him at all, but why not have a go at his manhood?
Mm. Quite right.
Yeah.
Especially that gravelly voice.
He's a terrible manhood.
You two met at school, did you?
Well, at that sort of time.
We
weren't at school, yeah. I was 15 when I met him. He's 3 years older. Still is. 3 years older than me.
It's so annoying. He's always going to be old.
Yeah, he is.
You're never going to have a little period where you're the oldest.
But it's annoying the other way around as well. He's got youth over me.
Tilbrook the younger brother syndrome. But you like, did you get... When you were first writing songs, I mean, you wrote a fantastic number. Mm. I mean, literally hundreds and hundreds of songs.
Mm. Yeah.
Together. Was that because you could write a song very, very quickly, or did you just spend hundreds and hundreds of hours together?
Well, when we started writing, we couldn't really get gigs. No one would take you seriously at that sort of age. We got a band. Oh, yeah, go on.
This is in the
1973 we met. 73 we met. And we spent, I would say, the best part of 3 years doing very little but writing, you know, and there was no quality control whatsoever. We'd just write songs, they'd be good.
Did you leave school at 16? Away? Did you leave school?
15, you could still leave at 15 in those days.
And so did you both leave at 15?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't remember going to school in the last couple of years anyway.
Where were you at school?
I was at a boys' school in Greenwich, and all I really remember about it is having a fantastic art teacher called Gail Woss. Uh-huh. And she was very tasty. Well, can I use the word juicy again?
She a Miss Woss or Mrs. Woss?
Well, I think she was a Miss Woss at the time, but she turned us on to music in a sort of odd way. Bands like Chicken Shack and, you know, all sort of King Crimson and stuff like that. Velvet Underground.
So did you have music lessons at school?
Well, we used to bring our album sleeves in and into the art room and then copy them, which was pretty difficult in those days because there was more attention taken to album sleeves.
Oh, album sleeves these days. Don't get me started.
Well, if you try to copy a King Crimson album sleeve or a Yes album sleeve, it's impossible, you know. They're sort of works of art.
Do you have any of those on your wall now, Chris?
Not today, but maybe tomorrow when I move in.
So you're 15.
Yeah.
You're 18. Mm. You're out of school. You're doing what kind of little jobs, part-time jobs, anything you can do, and spending most of your time together writing songs, wanting to be pop stars.
Yeah, always wanted to be a pop star, you know, watching Top of the Pops. Always wanted to be a pop star.
I was working in a health food shop, which was good, just down the road. I did that for about a year, and then I worked at a music shop. I left school, I went to my careers officer, and he said, all right, Tilbrook, what do you want to do? I said, I'd like to do something to do with the music business. He said, right, there's a metalwork factory in Plumstead. What are you going to do? And I went along, and I thought, I'm not doing that. I'm not having that. So I got a job in the health food shop. That was all right for a couple of years.
And as far as musically goes, were you self-taught? Were you taught?
Yeah, self-taught. You know, we'd known Jules all this time, and Jules and I sort of separately used to do gigs, and then Chris got involved in that, and then we started. Squeeze was really, you know, it was an unsuccessful thing as far as making money was concerned. It was easier to go in pubs, you know, one or two of us, and do that. So that's what we did.
Pay for beer.
Yeah.
Pay for beer.
Yeah, and you did that for a few years before you really. It was not until what 77, 78 you started having a bit of bit of success.
Yeah.
The time I remember, I think it was 79, was Call for Cats was the one that really brought you to everyone's attention. Call for Cats and Up the Junction. Lots of people tweet me and say, is Up the Junction true?
No, it's not.
And who wrote the words for Up the Junction?
I did.
You're the wordsmith, really, aren't you, Chris, mainly?
Yeah. But that was our second album, which really was our first album in many ways, because we went and did a record with John Cale, which was our first album. But he tossed all of our songs out and said, we've got to rewrite the whole thing, which was kind of good in a way. It kind of put a bomb under us.
All of your songs?
Pretty much, apart from a couple, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. He wanted to reinvent us in his own image. You know, which is a good exercise for a band to be involved in, but it didn't really end up sounding like either him or us.
I mean, if you're writing hundreds and hundreds of songs, you're not spending enough time on each one?
there's a certain amount of truth in that as well, you know. It was an interesting exercise, but it meant, as Chris said, you know, by the time we got to our second album, that actually was more like the first one should have been, and that was the one that started us off with a bit more of a bang.
Took the world by storm.
Took you know, several parts of England by storm.
Are you a poetry lover, Chris? Is that where you got your lyricism from? Where did it come from?
That's a really good question. I don't really know. I mean, I was because at school I didn't really pay attention very much. I used to write kind of poems on the back of my geography book or English book, and it's always that time when you get a younger teacher comes in, sits in for the week when somebody else is ill, and I remember a young guy coming in and he brought a Bob Dylan album in with him. And he was the first teacher that I'd met who...
The teacher brought a Bob Dylan album in.
I know, it was extraordinary in those days.
Were and he's smoking a joint at the same time?
Probably, I didn't notice. But he was the first guy that kind of didn't sort of tell me off for writing poetry. So I kind of gelled with him a bit, but he was only there for a couple of weeks.
Is that what led you, because your songs are often telling stories rather than just being, you know, repeat chorus. You know, was that a conscious decision, or was that just how you wrote a bit like your poetry sort?
Well, you know, as Glenn was saying, you know, we wrote quite a few, you know, hundreds of songs when we first started out, and I think the story started to evolve through that time. There was a lot of lovey-dovey stuff, but you sort of run out of that after a while. And then the drugs kick in and you go off in a different direction, you know.
Hatred starts to flow.
Yeah, yeah. And the imagination the world. Yeah.
Don't join a band, kids.
No, you do join a band.
Yeah, look, they're back together again.
Yeah.
You can feel the love in the room.
Did you... It's one of the things that Danny always talks about, is pulling muscles. I think he says it's the only song that starts straight in with a lyric. And he said, was that a conscious decision? We're going to do the song that, because even Hard Day's Night has the chord before it's been a hard day's night. Danny always makes the point, he can't think of any other song that kicks
starts
straight
like
in,
that,
like pulling muscles. Was that a decision?
How do you know when to start?
We just have to look at each other, you know, exactly. Really intently.
I mean, if you look at each other in that way, you might just start it anyway.
It'll kick off one way or another.
We were talking about you before you came in, not to make you paranoid.
That's nice.
Lou and I, and we both found out that line in Call for Cats about the Sweeney, the Sweeney's doing 90 because they've got the word to go. We both thought it was the Sweeney's doing 90 because they've got nowhere to go.
Yeah. I prefer that line.
The Sweeney's doing 90 because they've got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
You can have that. When you next do it, you can have that line. We'll give you that one.
Thank you.
Absolutely convinced. Listen, we'll chat more in a minute, but we have to do, speaking of doing 90, Orna's got some
legal
news.
Cheers for that. Cheshire, the closure, the M56. The eastbound side closed from 9 at Lym to 7 at Bowden. Westbound, it's closed from 6 at Hale to 8 at Tatton. It's for the bridge replacement work that's going on all weekend until Monday morning. Very early Monday morning, they're about 5 o'clock, and then it should reopen again. And we've already got a queue on that westbound side. It's queuing back to Manchester Airport. That's Junction 5 on the M56. It will affect you in general, travelling between Manchester and North Wales. But a lot of match traffic today as well, heading for Old Trafford. So just a allow some extra journey time. It will take you quite a while to get through that stretch on the diversion. And in Staffordshire, the M6 North. Slow traffic, it's an abnormal load making its way from 14, that's Stafford North, heading up towards Stoke at junction 15. The M42 in Staffordshire, one lane down where the barrier repairs are still taking place between Burton-upon-Trent and Tamworth, junctions 11 to 10. It's just along that stretch there, but it has been affecting both north and southbound sides of the M42. Hertfordshire still queuing after the earlier closure at junction 20 at King's Langley. It is open again, but the queue is still back to junction 18 at Chorley Wood. And the closure of the A404M southbound, that's still in place between Thicket Roundabout and the M4 junction 89. Southwater, the A24 southbound, it's closed between Mill Strait and Buckbourne Crossroads, or Buck Barn Crossroads. It's because of recovery work. A car left the road earlier on, and so that's being recovered at the moment. I want to mention 5 Live Travel.
25/11/2010. The Ashes. Coming soon to BBC Digital Radio. 5 Live Sports Extra.
Saturday morning on 5 Live. Call 0500 909 693. Text 85058.
I bought a toothbrush, some toothpaste, a flannel for my face, pajamas, a hairbrush, new shoes and a case. I said to my reflection, let's get out of this place. Past the church and the steeple, the laundry on the hill, the billboards and the buildings, memories of it still.
Tempted by Squeeze. Chris Difford and Glenn Tilbrook are in the studio. That's Paul Carrick singing on that, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
lovely. It's neither voice of you two chaps.
No.
And that's from the new album, which is Spot the Difference. So this is your old songs done again.
Yeah.
Tell us why you've done that.
Old songs done again. Well, let's say no person in their right mind would actually choose to do that, unless it were for a number of very distinct reasons, mostly being trying to get some control over our back catalogue, which we have no control over our back catalogue.
Oh, really?
Not moaning about it, you know. It's a deal we signed when we were 18 or whatever. There was an occasion when one time we arrived in New York, got into a hotel room, and there's an advert playing with one of our songs on it, and we hadn't been asked if it could be used. So essentially, the idea, Universal had licensed it out, and they own the copyright to our old songs.
Right.
We decided that it would be nice to be in competition with ourselves in that way. That's the reason why we recorded this stuff again, is to so we could say, look, okay, you want to pay this much to Universal, pay us, we get paid. And so it's a very sort of dry reason for re-recording all this stuff. And some of it is like, it's like being tortured going over that ground again and trying to do it,
It's not for the listeners, I hope.
No. The point
is, it's a wonderful collection of pop classics.
You're trying to get it so it sounds right, I mean, the thing is, I've bought many, certainly when I was younger, bought many, re-recorded versions of stuff and been really disappointed by it. What we wanted to do was to do it so it sounded really good and sounded as close as possible to the original.
It's peculiar. You're going back to stuff that you wrote such a long time ago in some cases.
Mm. Yeah.
Are you better musicians and songwriters now? Are you thinking, I wouldn't have done that. If I was doing it now, I wouldn't have done it that way.
That isn't the role that you're playing. I mean, you're in there as sort of archaeologist, music archaeologist, yeah. I suppose.
Curator of your own stuff, really.
Yeah.
you're just saying, this is how it was. And it's quite good.
Was the recording process the same? Did you try and replicate?
No.
It was the same instruments, though, wasn't it?
Same instruments. I'm a musical hoarder. I've got most of the stuff that we played on the original records that I still have now. So from that point of view, it was easy. But what you're doing is recreating something you've already done. So there's no, it's not inspirational. It's not, you're not going to say, yeah, we really nailed that one. But but it's, you know, it's just a question of getting it right, you know.
And is it what it's done as well is it's really helped the band sort of focus on how to play the songs live again, in a way. So when we're out on tour, which we are now, we're actually playing them very, very true to them, to the originals. And that's actually very exciting to live within that sort of feeling, if you like. And it's youthful feeling. Yeah. It's like putting old clothes on.
Again, nice. On tour, is it the same instruments again? Is that what are you playing there?
Oh, we'll be playing the guitar, yep.
Yeah.
But is it your original one?
No.
What, were they in the garage? What, is
this what else do you hoard? I mean, like your house full of stuff? Is it all gonna, are you going to be found one day with just a path between the
<Bologna? laughs> I've got every New Musical Express going back to 1974. That's what I sleep on. No, no. Studio, they're all kept in there.
Oh, yes. Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. So have you got all the notes and little lyric sheets and scraps of paper and all, everything
exist.
Like that?
They all still exist. And Glenn's got an amazing studio down in Greenwich, and it's got a library of tapes, all the original tapes and stuff. It's like a Squeeze museum, if you like. I froth at the mouth when I'm there.
Is that in a good way?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Neighing like a horse.
It's lovely to have all that, though. Really,
oh, it's fantastic. Yeah, I wish I had all that. It's really lovely. It's part of your roots and your family. You know,
there can't be many bands from your era that thought to keep everything. Surely, I think a lot of people bashed it up and threw it away. Or
yeah, every band has a hoarder, I think.
Yeah,
it just happens to be me.
There can't be many bands of your era whose material is still listenable, frankly.
That's very kind of you.
I mean, you do have. I don't want to blow too much smoke up your ear end, but there's a hugely influential songwriting duo, and lots of modern acts. Lily Allen is obviously one of her favourite bands. Mark Ronson and Kasabian and all these fantastic acts of today cite you as huge influences. Is that? Do you feel like, oh, we've done something worthwhile? Or do you not bother what they think?
I'm honoured by what other people think. I think it's brilliant. You know, we seem to be getting quite a few Lifetime Achievement Awards at this time of
shows
our life.
We've hung around long enough.
We've hung around.
Yeah, still alive.
Desperately knocking.
Yeah,
the
should
window.
You stop? You've achieved everything now. You can retire.
And tell me about this.
Wait for the gold watch.
You've been given. There's a music heritage plaque being put up in the place where you played your first gig. I didn't know about music heritage plaques, but apparently you were only the fourth act ever to be given
us by PRS.
Honor.
Amazing.
That's quite a thing, isn't it?
It was quite a thing. It was nicked the following day.
No, it wasn't. Tilbrook's hoarding it. That's where that went. Memorabilia, I'll get the Phillips head out.
Can I just say, I've got an email from Val. Looking forward to the interview. Well, I assume she's enjoying it now. Mm. I always thought, Alan, you would be the perfect actor to play Glenn Tilbrook in A Story of His Life. You have a very similar smile.
Oh, it's a bit late now. An 18-year-old me, maybe.
Not sure who would make a convincing Chris Difford, though he does look a bit like Pete Doherty.
Ooh.
Right.
Okay. I don't know how you should take that.
I think it's... I actually agree.
Well, I know it's younger out of the two.
Mm.
Sorry, Alan, but, you know.
Yeah, I'm out. Doherty's in. We just need a Tilbrook.
I'm intrigued by the similar smile. I like that Val's paid that much attention. And very quickly, Craig in Glasgow. I recommended a curry house to Chris a few weeks ago in Glasgow when filming an interview. Did he like it? I've been terribly worried. It might not be up to his standard. I know he likes a good curry.
It was amazing, I must say. Yeah. I think it was called Holy Cow or something like that.
I did get a tweet from someone who said, I said, any questions for Squeeze? And they said, oh, I bought them a pint at the Top Rank in Southampton in 1978. Any chance of it back?
Whoa.
Yeah, I've still hoarded. I've got that hoarded at my studio. I'll return it to you.
Get the actual glass.
If you come along to our gig at Southampton, we will buy you a pint.
Are you playing Southampton? You're touring soon, aren't you?
Yeah, we are playing Southampton. Plenty of tickets still available for that one.
The rest of them, though. Ooh.
The rest of them sold out. That's amazing.
The only date I've been given on a bit of paper here is that you're on the 14th of November, you're playing in Bournemouth. That's your first date.
That's the first date, yeah.
Mm. And how many dates are you doing? Is
splendid
it?
Stuff.
We're doing 5 weeks worth of them, up and down the country.
Separate vehicles? You going in separate vehicles?
Well, we like to travel in different sort of modes. Glenn's got a camper van that he drives around in, which is great.
Are you allowed in that?
I'm sure I'm not.
You don't know what? Absolutely not. Different free zone.
And I go around in a TARDIS.
Is it just a UK tour, or are you going to go to the US? Because they've always liked you over there. Have you?
Yeah,
sorry, I should have researched that.
That's all right. And we've just recorded a live album at the Fillmore West there, which is absolutely one of the best gigs we've ever done. Really, really
brilliant. Yeah, they went absolutely potty. And it was weird. It's weird, having been, going this long. This is the first tour. The tour we did in America was the first tour where there were a substantial amount of, oh, I'm going to use this phrase, kids coming along who obviously discovered Squeeze recently and were going bananas like they went bananas when we were first time round. It was an amazing feeling because that happened
fantastic.
All over the country.
You say to me, you're kind of definitively English London. Your lyrics are about London life. It's almost a little social document, some of them, the details and the references in particular, things like the Sweeney. Do the Americans, are they in tune enough with England and Englishness and our culture to... They turn up and they love it.
Yeah, I mean...
Does it surprise
I think
you?
They do. We're sort of postcards of the UK, England, I guess. I mean, they're also big fans of the Kinks, and that's also another sort of London English band, if you like.
Mm. Well, I think, when you get... the thing about Chris's lyrics, I think, is that... they ring true, and I think that people fill in the gaps. If you listen to sort of very heavily American songs, they're referring to things that you don't necessarily know about. You fill in the gaps yourself. Everyone does it, whatever sort of genre it is.
Yeah, I mean, you've got this heartbreaking love songs, which are certainly anyone can identify with. So I'm gonna ask you again about Up the Junction. I know you must have been asked about it about a million times. It's a song that stayed in my head since the 70s. Is this something that you just... There's a tale that you came up with, or is it based on a friend? What happened? This is a story about someone who has a wonderful life, is very, very happy, has a kid, has a few drinks, she leaves him and shacks up with a soldier. And that's basically the song. There's no chorus.
No chorus, brilliantly. And our manager at the time, Miles Copeland, said it will never be a hit because it doesn't have a chorus. He did. But yeah, I mean, it's a lyric that came, I suppose it was influenced by watching Wednesday plays when I was a kid. That was something that my parents used to let me watch. And a lot of those plays...
The kind of kitchen-sinky drama stuff.
Yeah, they were brilliant. And I suppose, as a young kid, your brain's a bit more like a sponge than it is when you get older. Now it's like a dishcloth. And so I sort of, absorbed all those stories watching them on telly, and that's how that lyric came about.
Because you do songwriting workshops now, don't you?
I do host my own songwriting workshops a couple of times every year, yeah.
Would you encourage people, to not have to think of verse, chorus,
yeah,
you encourage people to...
Well, I don't know if encourage, but I just say there aren't any rules, There can't be any rules. Can there?
No, I don't
Help
think
me.
So.
Tell me.
I live by rules.
You don't need rules. Yeah, have a unique, an extraordinary and unique sound, and they're a fantastic songwriting pair. It's fantastic to have
Thank
you here.
Thank you so much.
And to meet you, and congratulations on this new album, Spot the Difference. I hope the tour is marvellous.
Will be.
5 weeks, they're starting on the 14th of November in Bournemouth, and going pretty much up to Christmas, really, all over the country.
Yeah, it's going to be fab. Thank you. Enjoy the shows.
And I'll see you another time.
Yeah, come and see us at the show.
Tilbrook and Davis, never previously seen in the same room.
Same smile.
It's a one-off.
Liam is here. You'll be pleased with this because you're about to leave the studio. Yeah. He's going to tell you what the weather's like.
It's not that bad today.
What's it going to be like in Brighton tomorrow?
Brighton tomorrow, cloudy and damp.
Really?
If you're gone today, you're doing fine.
Oh, right. Well,
quick, go now.
Such is life.